Go back into South Bend's history. 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, and what do you see? You see groups of different people working to bring about change to their communities. They had different ideas of what that change should be. They didn't always agree, and their problems looked different than ours. But in every era, there were groups of people for whom making positive change was their life goal. This podcast, South Bend's Own Words, aims to bring those groups to light. We'll play you selections from the Civil Rights Heritage Center's Oral History Archival Collection with the goal of telling you the entirety of the history of the city. It's the story of many cultures, not just one. It's the story of South Bend. Helen Pope grew up on the west side of South Bend, Indiana during the 1920s. She watched her city grow and change over the 80 years she lived here. She earned a nursing license from Ivy Tech and a degree in early childhood development from IU South Bend. She worked as a nurse at the old Northern Indiana Children's Hospital back when they segregated their patients by race. Helen helped end that horrible practice. But when South Bend started losing its factory jobs in the 1960s, African Americans were among the hardest hit. More and more jobs needed college degrees, so without equal access to higher education, lots of positions were out of reach. Helen did what she could to help. She worked with women in need as a YWCA director and coordinated President Lyndon Johnson's Model Cities program on the West Side. She worked with the school system, with the NAACP, with Herring House, with the Urban League, and so many others. In the 1980s, she became the local coordinator of the History of Black Women in Indiana Project. So she didn't just make history in South Bend. She made an effort to share stories from across the state of Black women before her who also made history. Helen sat down with the Civil Rights Heritage Center twice in 2001 to talk about the ways she made history. I'll play you an excerpt of her first interview with IU South Bend's Kathy O'Dell, David Healy, and Dr. Les Lehman, along with longtime resident John Charles Bryan.
See, I was born in July of 1960, July 21st. And my parents moved up here sometime after that. My mother and father went to the school in Union City, Tennessee. They both were 18 when they married. My grandmother was the matriarch of the family. She had four sons. She had Erman, who was the oldest. My father was Eulous. Spelled E-U-L-O-U-S, Reeves. And all that my father couldn't supply for his family, Grandma Bufford, she saw to it that it would provide for. My father died in 1918 during a terrible... He worked in the steel mills of Gary before OSHA, and there was so much dust on the lungs that there was nothing... You know, they died like flies. Remember hearing that? My mother stayed there with my grandmother because at the time they were living side by side. I have a picture of the old stucco. They used to build stucco houses in Gary, lots of them. And the larger one, my grandma lived in, and the smaller one, my father and mother and the two of us lived in. After he died, my grandmother told my mother, Viola, you're a young woman. You must make a life for yourself. You don't have to stay here. If you find someone, they would like to marry you, you want to make a home for you marry, you're not bound, and mom will take care of these children until you're ready for them, and then I'll bring them to you. This is what she said to my mother. My mother married Daddy Rob, stepfather, in 1920. We moved in South Bend in March of 1920. When we came to South Bend, it was very interesting. Ethnic groups lived in patches, you know, clusters. Right around Western Avenue, Division Street at that time, there were quite an influx of black people, simply because employment was nearby, and that's why they were lured up here. There were drummers that went through the South asking workers, because these men that they needed were men who were accustomed to hot weather, because they needed somebody for the foundry. So they pulled lots of them out of Tennessee and Kentucky.
And where did they work at?
Studebaker. Oliver. Very few at Singer. My uncle drove the team at Singer through it, and so was Oliver. Bendix was not so popular at that time, and when Bendix did start, they did not start using, there was no foundry involved. So they didn't use the blacks. And that's why, then there were lots of Polish that were not used, because they were not adept enough to be able to read or write or understand, comprehend. So they didn't use them, Bendix didn't. But in that given area was a mixture of different people. Do you know that most of the churches in South Bend were located from, I would say from William Street to Olive. Not, it became more sparse as it got out to Olive Street where St. Adalbert's is. Let me say, I started at Oliver School in 1921. Mm-hmm. And then my parents lived there on the south side of South Bend. And I became a part of a Hungarian culture that I thoroughly enjoyed because I was always over there eating kolach and kefir and anything else her mother fixed. And my mother taught her mother how to fry chicken, southern fried chicken. This is how we reciprocated. We were neighborly. Mm-hmm. You could go through the alley and see everybody's garden. They had dill, you know, carrots. Everybody had a garden. You go through the alley and you see the Jewish men. They called them sheenies. But they went through there now, like we're having the curbside. They went through there and picked all the metal out. How do you think Herbert got started? That's right. His Jim Herbert's grandfather picked up out of the alley iron, take it over there, smelt it, started his business. And everybody had flowers in the backyard. Everybody had a grape arbor. You know, we communicate with each other because we were all learners. And when you're a learner, you communicate differently than one thinks he knows more than the other. Mm-hmm. So you see, we had such a common bond here. We meet at Volker's grocery store on over there on Indiana Avenue. And the mothers could not talk because the foreign women could not speak English. But they, Jim W. Panie, I learned how to say good morning in Polish. And I would say that in Hungarian, I learned how to speak Hungarian. As I watched our community grow and we came in contact with each other, the things that brought us together, we had to have meat, we had to have fresh milk, we had no place to store it, so we would store it. So we saw the same person, hello, and we learned to speak.
Right. What organizations were you involved in?
I was in the Youth Fellowship at Herring House. There was a community center here on Western Avenue. That's where I started in high school. I started working. Now, really, to tell you the truth, where did I first start? In my church. That's where I first started. Very actively involved in the church, in all the youth groups of the church. And then when I went to high school, the only thing I did, other than extracurricularly, other than my sports, and I was very active in sports, was Herring House. That's where my direction came from. There were two people there that were in leadership, B.G. Smith, Beverly Grostark, and Hattie J. And they were very, very fine people and really very interested in developing youth. And that's where I worked in the first time with the fellowship group over there.
What was Herring House exactly?
Herring House was, it was an old church that the Herrings, Frank Herring and his wife, had purchased and had given it to the black community for like a community center, a meeting place for people. We had no place to meet. As a matter of fact, if we met in our church, it was like a segregated situation. It was Baptist, Methodist, or whatever. If you met there, it didn't make any difference what church you belonged to. You were the community of South Bend. Okay. So that's what Herring House was. And that's where I got my start with working with the community. And then okay. I went with the NAACP. I was active in that as a youth. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what other organizations we had? Oh, we had the group here that... I worked with Mr. Allen. I worked with Mr. Wills. They were the ones who were in leadership at that time. Mm-hmm. Both of them were attorneys and very progressive. Mm-hmm. Both of them were. And then there were doctors that worked with them. There were morticians. They had a group here called the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin Club was all male. Mm-hmm. And all professional men or people who were veered towards progressively moving the black community. You see, this is very, very interesting, as I thought about you, because when I think about coming up in this community, I watch the movement here. There are so many things culturally that I think that should be shared in this particular history, because South Bend moved because of who was here in South Bend and their desire to see South Bend move. When I came here, as a matter of fact, I don't think there were six black kids going to the whole school of Oliver. So you see, and here I was in the only one in my class. Here I won the spelling bee. I didn't know whether I lost because I was black or whether I lost because I didn't know how to spell picnicking.
I forgot to put the K in picnicking. That's what I lost. Mm-hmm. I never gave myself credit for losing because of my color. Mm-hmm. I always blamed myself because I wasn't prepared the best. And therefore, that gave me that inner desire to always prepare myself the best that mm-hmm. I can, that I can stand anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I checked on your plaque at the Century Center when you were inducted in the Hall of Fame, and I noticed some of the other organizations were the STEP program.
Oh, yes. I was with Project STEP with the South Bend Community School Corporation. As a matter of fact, were you familiar with that?
I just read a little bit about it.
It was a training and employment program, mm-hmm. and that's what it was, an acronym, STEP, South Bend Training Employment Program for Youth.
Okay.
That one, STEP, was just an acronym.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Neighborhood Youth Corps. I worked in that, how long was I with the Neighborhood Project STEP? 3 years, and then I left from there, and I went to the YWCA as mm-hmm. Social Services Director for St. Joseph County, and that also was program that was directed from United Way, because mm-hmm. they had given us a budget, a special budget from the United Way Fund mm-hmm. through the YWCA to provide some services in the neighborhoods of South Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with the social services department there. And then I left there and went with Model Cities for 5 years until it terminated.
Year was that, Helen?
What?
Model Cities.
1975, 5-year demonstration program.
Now, what was the origin of the model? I just started, there's a great big clipping file mm-hmm. at the library, and I didn't have time to start reading through all that, but what was the origin of that? Started around 67 or late, or 69?
Well, it was in 69 when they started laying the groundwork for it.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, when Frank Allen, who was our mayor at that time, sent a proposal in to the federal government.
Lloyd Allen,
uh-huh. Sent a proposal in for Model Cities program. Mm-hmm. Model Cities was really a microcosm of the city the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And this we were able to do with the funds that we received from the government, because they were discretionary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could use them as we saw fit. It was an enormous sum of money. The original sum of money was an enormous 5-year demonstration mm-hmm. program. There were no teeth in it. It's like a baby born, no teeth at all.
Mm-hmm.
You had to put the teeth in. And as a matter of fact, what we did, we sat down and we strategized. They called the people in the community here and asked them what they wanted, what were the needs, and we sat down and itemized it, and we brought them under 5 different categories: education, employment, housing, social service and health services, and there was another one. That's when we were the ones that brought the Martin Luther King Center. We were mm-hmm. the ones that funded that. Over there on Linden Avenue. All right. And then I started working with the Model Cities program. I was the planner for social and health services.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they had one for education, one for housing, every employment, every physical, and we call physical. That's why we got the Martin Luther King Center through the physical committee. That was a suggestion of theirs, okay? Mm-hmm. And it came out of the groundwork that the people in this area, that given area, and Model Cities was circumscribed, the railroad track on the south,
mm-hmm.
Bennick's factory, Bennick's Drive on the west. Then it gerrymandered, came down around a little bit, and picked up Lincoln Way at Olive Street,
mm-hmm.
and then came all the way down Lincoln Way to William Street. And then we came south over to the railroad track. That was a circumscribed Model Cities area. Had every aspect of a community in it.
What were those aspects? I mean,
there were poor people, people of different cultures. Mm-hmm. There was industry. There was the church. Every aspect. You see, when I said William Street, remember I told mm-hmm. you we came? See, everything that a person would be involved in this particular given area that they mentioned. Yes, hey. And that's why they selected that area as the area. You see, you don't go into many areas and find this kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. You don't find all nationalities, all not only that, your financial, these people were working people. Given, think of the given area that I mentioned to you, if you know South Bend very well.
Mm-hmm.
You see. And then there were people who were brought in it, because everybody belonging to St. Pat's didn't live in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them lived out. But they were coming, they were using this area. So it impacted upon us. And then when he selected his 12 people, he selected whom he wanted, that it kept control of things.
Was this Dr. Phelps?
No. He was on the education committee.
Mayor Lloyd Allen.
You see, that's his program. He had to request this.
Okay.
And Ms. Langham, when he first requested it, he did not include the Model Cities Area people at all. And his contract did not go through. It was rejected. So then he had to call a meeting, and he called a meeting of all the people who would come at Hansel Center. We met in the gymnasium there. That's where we started. That's why we decided we want 36-member board, 24 from the community, Model Cities, and 12 from outside.
Who was the executive director?
Chuck Lennon.
Chuck Lennon, and then Hollis Hughes?
Chuck Lennon was the executive director, and he selected Hollis Hughes as his deputy. There was Chuck Lennon, Hollis Hughes, and John Tidwell. They both were deputy. Then when Chuck Lennon moved on to the housing allowance program, there was lots of money flowing in South Bend in the 70s. When he moved on to the housing allowance program, then Hollis became the executive director of Model City. And then before Model Cities died, Chuck pulled Hollis into housing allowance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? John stayed there. And then, of course, Hollis left the housing office and went with United Way. Let me tell you one thing. I worked at the South Bend Credit Bureau, and I talked all over the country, and even out of the country, even in India. I did a calling, clearing files, okay? And you know that I cleared a file, I never will forget it, of a place, and was it Georgia? And I asked for this person. Yes, it was Georgia, because I said, I have an address. The last address I had was Peachtree Street. Oh, you know who that is. They're black. What do you expect? She knew who I was. Then I called Sears, and they had the same type of classification for blacks. Sears, Roebuck. Back in the 1965, yeah, that's when I worked there, 64 and 65. There was an unspoken word.
And that was what South Bend was like also.
Oh, yes, it had that. But on the other hand, it had people in the background. South Bend could have been a hotbed here several years ago. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
South Bend could have been a hotbed. But there's been an element here in South Bend that's kept things from rising. And it's not a black element. It's a combination of people. Well, what I'm saying is there has been a force, an undergirding force here in South Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And has not been all black and has not been all white. This community has worked feverishly.
As far as working together, you mean?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I know this to be a fact. I know this to be a fact because I've watched it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movement here that's squelched a lot of things that could have been a hotbed here in South Bend. I've watched it. I read the paper. I absorb everything I read. And I read between the lines. But there's been an element here that has kept things on an even keel. This could have been a hotbed. There are lots of things that could have sparked some problems in South Bend. But there's a group of people here
that keep the channels open.
You better believe it. That have worked, and you don't see their names emblazoned in the newspaper or on the TV. But there's an element here. I can feel the movement. I've sensed it. I sit here sometimes. I think of lots of things. But there's an element in South Bend that has kept things stable.
South Bend's Own Words is made possible by executive producer Kevin Tidmarsh and me, George Garner. Want to see and hear more about South Bend's history? Our archival collection is online at Michiana Memory, a partnership with the St. Joseph County Public Library. Go to michianamemory.sjcpl.org. Special thanks to Civil Rights Heritage Center Director Daryl Heller for his guidance and support for this project. Learn more about the center and how it changed a formerly segregated South Bend swimming pool into an active learning center dedicated to sharing the history and contemporary issues around civil rights and social justice. Visit us in person or online at crhc.iusb.edu.